June is a celebration of all things dads. In our Wonders and Worries community, we have the privilege of meeting some truly heroic dads on a daily basis. We meet dads in treatment, dads supporting their loved ones through illness, dads leading nonprofits to support families in need, dads providing life-giving medical care, dads as researchers, empaths, experts, and advocates, all making our corner of the world a little bit better just because they were ours. For however long. Welcome to Wondercast, a community collaborative podcast supporting families navigating the complexities of chronic illness. Wondercast is brought to you by the generous sponsorship of Texas Oncology. Texas Oncology, more victories, more breakthroughs, experts in cancer care. Today we visit with Jordan and Will as they share their story. Through this Wonders and Worries family highlight, we walk through Bill's illness journey and see resiliency and hope to infinity and beyond.
My name is Jordan Newman. I live in Kyle, Texas. I have one son. He's 11. My late husband, who passed away in 2021, is who we're here to talk about. I'm a graphic designer. Bill and I moved to Austin in 2012 when I was pregnant with Will. So we've been here for about 13 years, and it's been awesome. We've stayed in the same house. We really built a pretty close community here in Kyle. My parents live in Lockhart, so we get to see them quite often and do family dinners together, and got family in Dripping Springs. We've definitely been connected throughout the community, and working downtown, get to see a lot of Austin and things grow over the decade.
My name is Will Newman. I am the 11-year-old son from my mom. Yeah, my dad is who we're here to talk about. And I like to play video games. I like to play basketball. It's really fun. I just like doing outdoor sports and stuff like that.
Well, I am so grateful to have you both with me today for my guests. A lot of the families that we work with, they're always worried about their kids. And they want to make sure their kids understand what's happening and that they feel a part of things. So I love how your mom suggested that you maybe be a part of this too.
Well, I'll start by telling you a little bit about Bill. So Bill was a very, very special guy. He was a friend to everyone. You were only a stranger once until you met him. And he was a very, very true friend. Initially, the onset of his anoxic injury was from a heart attack that started from an aneurysm that he didn't know about. So he had the heart attack at the age of 38, which is pretty young. Definitely get your health checkups and see what's going on early in life, and don't wait, don't hesitate to know what's going on. But so initially that was the cause of the injury. February 23rd, 2020 is the day that our life changed. At 6 a.m. I heard him breathing. He was downstairs on the couch. It was a sound I'd never heard before. So I ran downstairs. He had gotten in late. He went to like a boxing night with his friends the night before. I ran downstairs and I immediately knew something was wrong. I took off my smartwatch and I put it on his hand. There was no recognizable heartbeat, so I immediately called 911. I was on the phone with them. They were at our house within 16 minutes. I couldn't lift him off the couch or anything to get him on the floor to start any life-saving measures. And also, I have no idea like what was happening up to the point whenever I heard that breath. So I'm thinking the anoxic injury, which is a complete deprivation of oxygen to your brain, had already kind of set in or possibly did during the hour plus that it took them to get his heart rate back beating. So he was in a coma for about 3 days. After that, in the hospital, his mom came in and actually stayed with us basically from the day he went to the hospital until the day he passed away. We had an overwhelming amount of support during that time. And initially during the hospital stay, things were very unknown. The doctors didn't really know. We had to do a lot of tests. They did the cryotherapy where they lower his body temperature in order to preserve brain function. It's very similar to what happens when people drown in ice water, where the ice water actually preserves their neurological pathways and maybe not so much damage is done. So they kind of try to replicate that in a hospital environment for patients in this situation. And after full brain scans, MRIs, the doctors came in and basically told us that, you know, he wasn't the person he was before. All the stuff that made him Bill, it was gone. So I think that was like really the hardest part and of dealing with that. Just knowing and hoping and wishing that it wasn't true. And then having to tell Will. that everything was going to change. It was really hard.
Will, were you home when your dad had his event? Were you sleeping because it was so early in the morning, were you up? Yeah,
I was sleeping. My room is right above here. I was the whole house away, so I couldn't even hear a thing.
Did you wake up when the ambulance came or not even when the ambulance came?
Yeah, he was asleep. I had a neighbor that came over while I was in the hospital with Bill. And he went to school on day one and just did everything like normal. I didn't want him to worry. I wanted him to just kind of enjoy the day and not think about anything. And then whenever I got home that evening is when we sat down and had a talk. And one thing that I've always approached with parenting is that I want to present the facts. And I don't ever want to keep him in the dark about anything, because the first step in healing is knowing exactly what's going on, and not knowing or skirting around the issues or trying to like avoid the hard things is, to me, it's working backwards.
Honesty, really, even to the littlest kids, if you're giving them the information at a level that they can process and understand, that's better than giving them no information at all. And so I think that that was a really brave decision, and I'm sure a very difficult one, since it was the day of and you had all of those unknowns still, since he was still in a coma at that point.
Yeah, I would say every single moment was the moment that you have to live in a situation like that. If your loved one is in a situation where things are just unknown, you've got to follow your intuition. You've got to listen to your gut. You've got to do what's best for them, because they don't have a voice. Bill did not have a voice to say, I feel this way. I need this. So you have to really tune in. I mean, with an anoxic injury in general, part of the rehab process and everything in a long-term acute care facility, you see a lot of cases, and I understand each one is unique. They're all nuanced differently, the amount of support and care that they get. And I just remember me and Sandy, Bill's mom, were just 100% dedicated to tuning into him and really trying to understand where he is, because in an anoxic injury, you don't really know what's going on in their brain. We would tell stories to Bill, and he was nonverbal. He couldn't use his body. Over the 14 months that he lived with this injury, you could tell he would laugh at jokes. He would smile when he'd entered a room. He knew his name. You could tell that he recognized his name, but he couldn't react to those things. He couldn't speak to us. He couldn't use his limbs. He was trapped in there. And I can't imagine what that was like for him. But knowing that we just did everything we could as far as getting him therapies, working with health insurance advocates, being very, very involved with the rehabilitation process. And those are the kind of things you've got to tune into. And Will, too. Will was his light and joy. And we tried to bring him into very appropriate activities that we would do with him, whether it be speech therapy or occupational, where he could be a part of it and it wouldn't be very taxing emotionally for Will. You just have to kind of like gauge that stuff and use your intuition mostly. And I'm not sure if anybody else has experienced anything like this, but I was with a nurse next to his bedside and he was fully in his coma. And we were talking about what the process is like for someone waking up out of a coma. And the nurse mentioned that they usually tie your hands down to the bed, because the first thing that a patient wants to do if they're conscious and they're waking up out of a coma like this and they have all this stuff in their mouth and around their ears and just medical equipment around their body, they start to grab at it and pull. I saw across the room, my phone lit up and there was a text from Bill's phone, which was right on top of my phone. And it was emojis. It was all emojis. And it was two American flags and a knife. Which to me meant set me free. And I was like, how is this possible? First of all, but that was just an odd occurrence during that conversation. And I'm not sure how it happened, but I'm assuming that was a message from Bill. I mean, it's just kind of unknown, I guess. The nurses mentioned that things like that do happen in the hospital. But and also, I think like overall, this is just kind of a note that just because your loved one is there and can't speak doesn't mean they don't hear you. I think overall, it's important to keep them informed too in their journey and what's going on with medical diagnoses, therapies, and all that kind of stuff. Like if they're moving to a new facility, to inform them. And I think he appreciated us keeping him informed and not acting like he was just an object in the room, but someone who had a choice or, you know, like had a voice.
Absolutely. How many days was he in the ICU after they started warming up his body core temperature?
Yeah, he was in the ICU for about 2 weeks. So he was admitted on February 23rd, 2020, and then he was there in ICU for 2 weeks and then moved to an LTAC facility in South Austin, Texas Neuro Rehab, on March 9th. He was there until April 9th. And that's whenever he moved home. Once we left the hospital and there were no more nurses and charts, I went home and I made my own charts. I had check boxes for every medication. I had set times where I'd take his blood pressure, the schedule for the week, which days were what we were working on physically, for all that stuff. I'm a checklist person. So in order to make progress on things, I've got to see it visually. And honestly, like, that was probably the best thing I could have done, because the doctors, anytime we'd have a doctor's appointment, I would scan them all in and forward them a month's worth of charts from home. So they knew his current status. They knew what he was progressing on. They knew those little things, his bathroom schedule, his urinary tract, because we had to do catheters. I got really good at catheters. I'm not a doctor, but I felt like one. It wasn't easy to put myself in that position when I'm caring for my husband and not just a patient.
I know you were in this dual role suddenly. It's not like you went to school for that or had that training. Even for Will, I'm sure. Will, you were even probably in that role of helping mom. And
did my best not to like be any trouble. I was on my best behavior because I could see that my mom and grandma were really stressed out with this, and I didn't want to be anymore.
Now, did you have like a home health nurse that would come once a day to help?
We did. Her name was Maria. I can remember one thing. There was one time that there was like a lizard into the floor, and she was very scared, Maria. And I just picked it up. I picked it up by the tail, and I started tickling it. It was funny.
I love how all these people that were never in your life before kind of became special people in your life because of what happened to your family. Like, I'm sure Maria felt very connected to you guys because she was in your home and helping with your dad. And so he was home then for the rest of his duration, or did he ever go back into a hospital environment?
He did on a few emergency situations. There were just some things that would happen either related to symptoms of this injury. We leaned on our community, on our family, on our friends, and we built a Facebook page to keep updates regular and had an Amazon wish list, and people would purchase things to help Bill for us, and like compression boots and just things of that nature. And my company that I work for, Cushman Wakefield, the people pulled resources together to have our garage finished to basically be his hospital room, because we didn't really have another place in our house other than the dining room to put him. This is not a hospital.
Yes.
And not having those resources, I couldn't imagine trying to go through this without that support. And I would hope that people in this situation had a community and something to lean on in order to help their loved one.
It looks way different.
It does.
It's a great space. I love the wall in the background too, the wood wall. It's beautiful. Sorry, listeners, you can't see it, but it's beautiful. Ultimately, what led to his passing?
The doctors told me repeatedly that this is probably the most well cared for anoxic brain injury patient they've ever seen. I had his hair cut. I took very good care of him. I made sure he was clean, because those are things I value myself. I knew he valued them too. So I wanted to make sure he had those things. So he ultimately passed from a heart attack. It was April 6th in the morning, and it took me back to day one. I recognized the breathing. It was the breathing, and I knew something was off. So I didn't even have to check him. I just called 911. Maria was there. She helped me stay stable. Will was sleeping again. I made sure that he was not a part of any of this super traumatic stuff. So I was thankful that he wasn't there to experience and doesn't really have memories of the emergency team with Bill, because that can be, it's not pretty, obviously. It's life. It's just what happened. His heart, after his initial heart attack, was only working at about 30, well, initially, probably about 15, 20%. It grew to about 35% is what his cardiologist said on that last day with the aneurysm and everything that was untreated. Still, he died. I think his heart just, it was done.
It had worked very hard. Will, did you go to school that day, or were you, do you remember, were you home? Did you stay home with mom?
That was probably one of the most memorable times during all of this. Basically, I came back from second grade. It was around the end of the year, and our neighbor, Miss Cassie, she lives over there, right outside our backyard. She was carpooling with me and her kids because she knew it was kind of like a hard time right now. I got home because she kind of dropped me off in front of our house, and then I could see my mom and my grandma right outside talking on the chairs that my dad built. And then they sat me down, and then they told me of like how he had a heart attack and they couldn't really save him and that he passed away.
Do you feel like you understood at that time? Because seven's still young. Did you understand kind of what that meant?
It's really not normal for this to happen to a young kid like this. But I grew way emotionally, like way faster than I should have. Like, I should right now be like at least my age and maturity, but it's like, it's kind of hard to explain. But basically, I kind of accepted the fact that he passed away because in the back of my head, I kind of understood that he probably wasn't going to make it because just seeing him like that for a year and a half, seeing him just laying in the fold-out bed right in the garage with all the tubes and wire and stuff connected to him, it was really hard to see that. Basically, it was like, I was definitely sad, but I didn't cry. Kind of just accepted the fact that that happened. And every single time that he's gone to the hospital, I either see my grandma or mom crying, and then because either something really good happened or something really bad. And if they're just like being quiet and talking, it was probably something bad. So, I mean, I was thinking it because it's unusual for them not to be
for us to be together, really.
Yeah.
What that tells me is that you have this gift that has grown. Maybe you were this way already when you were little, but you have grown this gift of really just reading a room, like being in tune to what's happening around you, that you knew by your mom's facial expressions and just changes in routines that something was different. That's a very, very special gift.
Well, honestly, Wonders and Worries probably helped him develop it. That was kind of Will's first introduction to therapy.
I do remember I did the thing with Clay, and then I did a emotion bingo, I think. I remember talking about like what I thought the situation on my dad was like, and I always was kind of like hoping that it was going to get better, but I always kind of knew that something like this is hard to come back from.
I love that you got to go through the program. Did you continue seeing her after he passed away for a little bit, or had you stopped and then restarted back up with her?
So he saw her probably like two or three times right after, just for bereavement support. And then she helped connect us with a therapist to move forward with. So we've both been in therapy since all this has happened. And I'm a big believer in therapy just in general for life support. And it's something that I know that has helped me with resilience going forward.
So much with moving forward now with caring for yourself through therapy. But you've also done some amazing projects that have helped, I think, probably with processing everything that happened. Do you want to share?
I authored a children's book called Stella Moonbeam's Mission to Inner Space. And it is about a little girl astronaut, because I love space, who goes on a journey and learns about different mental health therapy techniques that we utilize during the time with Bill to make herself feel lighter and brighter. So the story just kind of follows her journey, and each character that she encounters kind of represents a person in my life that supported us during that time. And
I love that. That's one of my favorite things in talking to authors, is getting to hear the inspiration behind their ideas. And I love that it's the people that were in your life at that time that supported you.
Yeah. And recently I won an award through my company called the Community Fellowship Award, the global recognition program. I submitted a proposal for what I would do with a month off if I were given an opportunity to give back to my community in some way. And I chose to capitalize on the book that I authored. And I actually published it last year, self-published it on Bill's birthday, May 19th, 2023. And so it's been a year that it's been published, and I was able to, with the support of my company after winning this fellowship, I was able to create this little cosmic discovery box, which I sell them on Etsy right now. I mean, they're just kind of like rudimentary. I mean, the idea is there, but it's basically like a little kit. It comes with a book, and it's just, it's got a little trinket for each therapy. And it's like, it's a little play box for like an elementary school kid, even though I've had a few middle schoolers say, oh my gosh, I love this. So it's been really well received, and just something that I would love to give back to people, to kids, families. Created a little workshop that helps families open lines of communication to discuss the hard things. Never sweep anything under the rug is like my motto. I want my rugs underneath part clean.
Yes.
I want to keep it all out in the open and be open and honest and be able to work through challenges with my family and to utilize all those people and relationships for support and also give them support if they need it. And I mean, it's completely reciprocal, those kinds of things. And you cannot pour from an empty cup. You've got to fill your cup.
Will, do you feel like your mom's, her books and her projects, do you feel like they helped you too with being a part of it? Do you feel like it was also a part of your journey too?
Yeah, I really enjoyed doing the workshops with my mom, like all of her books and stuff. And also, I think it was a great idea because it was like just an amazing way to get like young people to focus on their mental health and like remember to take care of themselves.
With other families that might be listening that have maybe had someone in their family that had a heart attack or an anoxic brain injury or even maybe passed away, Will, what advice do you have for them?
Well, they all care about the person. And if you ever leave any information away, it makes people sad, I guess, because I would feel terrible if my mom didn't ever tell me anything about this, because it would make me feel like I wasn't trustworthy enough to know this.
Was there a certain way that she gave you information?
Yeah, I mean, we sat down, and usually on the couch, we have very comfortable couches, so it made it easier. And she just kind of, like, told me what was going on, and it was always better to know. It's hard to explain, but basically, right whenever she tells you something is happening, the second before she actually tells you, it feels kind of, now that you know something's happening, but you don't, like, know exactly what is happening, it just kind of feels like, it feels worse than whenever she actually tells you. So definitely tell people what's going on, and it shouldn't matter how hard it is. You always got to take care of the people you love. And also take care of yourself. That does matter, too.
That does.
Yes.
Now, some kids say that they want their friends to know and their teachers to know what was happening. Other kids say, I don't want anyone to know at school. Do you remember? Did you share with your friends?
Well, people could definitely tell, like a lot of my best friends and stuff, they could definitely tell that something was on my mind, and that like I just kind of shared with them that like my dad was going through this, and that it was all happening. It was way better to hear people's voice, but I wasn't very open at telling people at the beginning, because I kind of felt like everybody else kind of had their own problems that nobody would really have the time to even like think about my own.
You feel better about sharing now?
Yeah, I just kind of feel like after being in like a welcoming environment from my friends and like just them understanding and like empathizing and stuff, it just felt a lot better. It just felt like people were on my side.
And I bet now if you have a friend that is going through something hard or they're having a hard time, I bet they will feel that you are a safe person to talk to about that, because they know that you've gone through something hard too.
My friend, the very next year, his dog died. It was very sad, so I definitely helped him out through that.
And it sounds like you do a great job of sharing empathy and validating the people that are around you, which is another incredible gift. You're right, you are wise beyond your years. But you've done some tremendous work, you and your mom both have, in getting support for yourself and growing as a family in what you're able to do. And I think that this is a testament to that.
There was one thing that helped me out the most during all of this that was happening. It wasn't even a person. It was the trampoline, okay? We had so much fun on that thing. And do you want to know something amazing? That trampoline is such an amazing thing because the very day, the day before that my dad had all that happen and the year and a half of just stuff happened, we spent the whole day on that trampoline. We just played games that I learned from the neighbors, and it was so fun because we just got to spend so much time together.
Well, and you know, there's a lot of research that shows that mechanism of moving your body that way, especially with bouncing and rocking and jumping, can be very therapeutic and very calming. It can do a lot for your body just in general. I think that trampoline is a great recommendation for people and just movement, right? Getting out and moving.
Yeah. I'm gonna lie. Trampoline, like, I have never felt more at home than at, like, a jungle gym. It might just be me, because, you know, I'm just I'm a chipmunk, I guess. Boy. I'm a preteen, you know? I like going out, and I'm a 11-year-old boy, so I like just having fun and going places.
So what has changed for your family since your dad's passing? Do you guys do anything to celebrate either dad's birthday or Father's Day or the day?
Yes, we celebrate Father's Day, his birthday. We don't celebrate the day he died or the day that he got sick. We pretend those days don't exist, but we just spend them like any other day, and we just don't really talk about those
What do we
days.
Do for Dad's birthday?
Dad's birthday? We go to Pinball's Kingdom, and we we get these figurines.
So we went to Pinball's Kingdom last month for Bill's birthday, but the previous year, I was talking to the universe. I was like, Bill, if there's anything you can get this kid for your birthday, it is a buttload of tickets. I had chills, and I walked up to this machine, the little key turning machine, and I was like, come on. So I scanned my card, I went for the 40,000 tickets, and I missed it. And I was like, okay, last try. So I did it, and I got it. And I ran over to Will with a 40,000 ticket thing, and I was like, thank you, Bill. So Will was able to pretty much pick whatever he wanted off the wall for Bill's birthday that year. And we still have tickets left over.
I got my best friend, Noah. He went there for my dad's birthday because he's always just been an amazing part of my life. And he is obsessed with football and basketball cards, basically. It's trading cards. And there is this huge bucket of trading cards that they were selling for like 12,000 tickets. So, and since I have 12 tickets is a measly amount for a king like me. Only a peasant would have trouble. I got it for him, and it was super cool because we're moving up to Michigan, so we got to get rid of all of the tickets like now.
We have an adventure ahead of us for sure. So I got engaged, and my fiance lives in Detroit, Michigan, and so we're gonna move up there this year. We've spent a lot of time healing and growing, and we're taking Bill with us too in our heart. And Brian is so accepting of everything, of our past, of our journey. And he's got two boys. It gets a little lonely here sometimes. So meeting him and being able to do long distance with him and getting to know him and his two kids, Will and Alex, his youngest, are the same age, and Ian is 14. We've created life again. I mean, life is growing again, and we're both very thrilled. 23 days, June 28th.
Y'all are living. Life is continuing, and that's what I think Bill would want for you too, is your life is continuing. Yeah.
So he'd be proud of us and happy for us. And he was that kind of person.
Is there anything else that you want to mention that I failed to ask or that you felt like you didn't get to share?
For someone in this situation, and I know this is hard for people who were close to that person, like people that were close to Bill, it was hard for them to come over and see him that way. But I know that he needed to hear those voices, and he needed to hear those stories and remember that those times in his life and to know that people were there for him, even though I know it was probably an unimaginably painful to be in that situation and not be able to do anything with that person or for them to see him that way. You know, we tried to make it as easy as possible. We've used blankets and prop him up and really try to make him feel like he was part of the conversations. We never, ever, ever excluded him in anything. He was always a part of our conversations. We directed questions to him. He was there, and we were just his advocates. And that's what you have to be for people in that situation, is you have to be their advocate, and you've got to try to tune in to them. And I think he really appreciated that. I could tell. I could just feel it. The support and outpouring of love was really what helped us get through everything.
I guess everybody, whoever might be going through this, just know that there are people that care about you and that are rooting for you.
Thank you for tuning in to our podcast today. Please subscribe and continue to check back as our content is ever evolving. For questions or specific content-related requests, please send an email to podcast@wondersandworries.org.